We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. This morning, in this hour of the show, we'll be talking about politics in Honduras and the political crisis that's been going on in that country over this past summer. Back in late June, the president of Honduras, Manuel Zelaya, was forced from power. He was put on a plane to Costa Rica and sent out of the country. His opponents there in Honduras say that what he was trying to do was engineer a change in the country's constitution to get rid of the term limit on the presidency. They're the president is limited to just one term. And they said Mr. Zelaya was trying to change that so that he could run for a second term, something that Mr. Zelaya has denied. Now, although many people in Honduras seem to support Zelaya's removal, other people in the country and also in the region said they felt that it was illegal and that Mr. Zelaya should be reinstated. This morning, we'll talk about this summer's political turmoil in Honduras with Andres Conteras. He is director of the Program on the Americas of Nonviolence International. He is also founder of Democracy Now! In Spanish. He spent quite a lot of time in Honduras this summer. And in fact, as I'm told, as soon as we finish this conversation, he's getting on a plane and he's going back. So we're pleased that he could spend a little time with us this morning. Questions, of course, are welcome, as always. The only thing we ask of callers is that people are brief in their questions and comments, so we can accommodate as many callers as possible and keep things moving. And please, we hope people will focus their comments on the topic, but certainly people are welcome to join in. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. The toll-free line, which is good anywhere that you can hear us, is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, questions certainly are welcome. Mr. Conteras, hello.
David, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I appreciate much you giving us your time. Just to start out, let's go back to June 28th. What happened there in Honduras on that day?
Well, June 28th, 2009, a very important date in Honduran history. It was to be the date of what in Spanish was called the Cuarta Urna. Cuarta Urna refers to a straw poll that was to take place on that day. It was really a non-binding inquiry of the Honduran population, asking them as to whether they wanted to eventually look at the possibility of having a constituent assembly, which is a constitutional review by the people, and really evaluating whether the Constitution meets their needs. So this was interpreted by the dominant media in Honduras as well as internationally as President Zelaya wanting to extend his limited term in office as president of the country, which really was not his intention at all. He really did want to inquire with the people as to whether they wanted to have a constitutional assembly. So that was to take place on June 28th. And what happened is that the elite forces in the country, both the political as well as the military and economic elite, really were very frustrated with President Zelaya, and they saw this move in terms of just an initial step toward an eventual consideration of a possible change in the Constitution as a real threat to their power establishment. And so this led to what took place at 5:30 in the morning that day. 100 or 200 soldiers showed up at the home of President Manuel Zelaya. He was in his pajamas. They never allowed him to change. They shot into his home and violently removed him and put him on a plane in the capital city of Tegucigalpa. And then the plane landed about 60 miles later at a place called Sotocano Air Base, which is where the Joint Task Force Bravo is located. It's a U.S. task force. The base is commonly known as Palmarola. And it was very interesting that the plane should land there. There was no reason for it to refuel just 60 miles later, and it wasn't going to go for very much further. But so there are questions as to why did the plane land at this base shared between Hondurans and the U.S. military. There are about 600 soldiers that are based there, U.S. soldiers that are based at that that airbase. And then President Zelaya was flown to Costa Rica, where he was forced into exile. It's very important to note that the Honduran Constitution in Article 102 clearly explains that it is absolutely illegal to forcibly expatriate any Honduran. Mm-hmm. So this was a clear violation of the Honduran Constitution, as well as the fact that the military were the ones who did the assault on his house and arrested him and forced him on the plane. And, of course, the military, that is not their responsibility to make arrests. They do not have the legal capacity to arrest any citizen, and yet they are the ones who ended up kidnapping the president, forcing him on the plane, and forcing him out of the country.
Yeah, I think that there are some people who have pointed out that even if the straw poll had gone ahead and that people had said, yes, let's, in effect, let's have a constitutional convention, or at least let's get a bunch of people together and think about changing the Constitution, even if that had happened and then the next step had happened, that there was no way, in fact, for all of this to occur, the Constitution to be changed in time for the next presidential election, so that that would call into question those who would say that the motive here was for Mr. Zelaya to engineer a change in the Constitution so he could have a second term.
It's very good that you're pointing that out, because the straw poll on June 28th was asking the population whether they wanted to consider or not whether there would be a referendum on the very day of the next election, which would be November 29th. And, of course, President Zelaya would not be on the ballot at all for that election. So your point is very, very well taken. And the name Cuarta Urna is basically it's the fourth poll that is considered, that would have been considered on election day. The first three have to do with the other elections, which is the presidential election is the first. Then there are congressional elections, and then there are mayoral or municipal elections. So those are the three normal urnas, the three normal polls that are taken during an election, and then this was going to be the fourth poll on this question.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the motivation here was that the people who are in control, essentially, in the country were not interested in seeing any sort of a change in the Constitution, was there something specific that people were thinking about or talking about in terms of constitutional change that the people who were at the top of the power structure in the country would not have wanted to happen?
Yes. Basically, I don't know about the very specifics of it, but really it has to do with the fact that the Constitution protects the powers that be in the country. Mm-hmm. And so the economic elite, the business and industry folks do not want that power base threatened. They do not also the political elite. Honduras has been dominated by two traditional political parties, both the National and the Liberal Party. And they you know, they want that to continue. There are minor political parties that have had members of Congress, three other minor parties, and then of course the judicial elite as well. The courts came out against this attempt by the people and the president trying to move forward with this initiative. So. You know, the specifics of it I'm not familiar with, but there is one very interesting article in the Constitution, and that article is number three. And article number three is actually a very progressive article. Article three of the Honduran Constitution basically says that when a government has usurped power by armed force, the people have a right to insurrection against that usurped power. Mm-hmm. So that is actually a constitutional article that the people in the streets of Honduras on a daily basis now for over 61 days have been doing since June 28th.
I expect that for those people who supported Mr. Zelaya's removal, they would try to spin it this way. They would say, well, look, yes, it's true that military force was used to remove the duly elected leader of the country. However, they would say, but the military didn't take over. The man who was the next in line, who I believe was the speaker of the legislature, was named the interim president. And they would say, well, the same people are in power that were in power before. And I guess the question I'm leading towards is it appropriate to say that this was a coup, or was it something else?
I really do believe it was a military coup, because without the military, the actual abduction of the president could not have happened. And that, as I pointed out, you know, the armed forces do not have that in their legal purview to actually arrest or detain people in that way. And the military has very much backed the regime of Roberto Micheletti, who was the head of the Congress, and then he is now the de facto president. And so if you look at, and we'll talk about human rights violations since the coup, a big part of the repressive apparatus, which is keeping this coup regime in power, is very much backed by the military, even though the name that is used often in Honduras is a civil military dictatorship that has really taken over illegally, and that is the coup that needs to be undone.
And I think that certainly one of the things that people have pointed to here as particularly problematic and a real step backwards, not only for Honduras but perhaps for Latin America, is the role that the military has taken in this.
That's exactly right. And, you know, if you look at what Amnesty International has documented very, very in much in detail, as well as the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights from the OAS, they have very deliberately interviewed many who have been just brutalized by both the military and the police in the streets. Just the most, almost 100% of the time, it's been very peaceful demonstrating. There have been some who the resistance against the coup has said that there have been some infiltrators who have used some violence, and that is not at all the commitment by the front, which is what they call themselves, the Frente, of this. It's basically a huge coalition of civil society groups and movements, indigenous women, students, labor, environmental human rights activists. They have all come together, and politicians as well, including both of those who are part of the minority party, which is in opposition, which is called the UD, the Democratic Unification Party, but also members of the PNU, it's called, another party, and members of the Liberal Party many of them have come out against the coup. So basically what we're seeing there in Honduras is the repressive regime that has been put in place to uphold the coup is something that is an absolute necessity for those in power to continue in power illegally.
Let me just very quickly introduce again our guest, Andres Contreras. He serves as the director of the program on the Americas for Nonviolence International. This is an organization that's interested in promoting nonviolent action around the world to reduce the use of violence worldwide. They have an office in Washington, D.C., but also in a number of other countries. They have centers in other countries around the world, in Aceh, Indonesia, in Bangladesh, Jerusalem, Bangkok, and in Moscow. He spent time this summer in Honduras. He's on his way back as soon as he finishes talking with us. He's the founder of Democracy Now! In Spanish. We're talking about politics, what's been going on this summer in Honduras, and questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, let's go right here next and talk about the reaction. I'm particularly interested in your thoughts on the reaction of the government of the United States, which seems to have said that it does not favor the coup, that Mr. Zelaya should be reinstated. However, I think also there are people who have been critical of the Obama administration for, in a sense, saying that, but saying it in a rather half-hearted way, as if they don't really mean it. What do you think has been the attitude of the administration to what's going on there in Honduras this summer?
Well, David, I was with a delegation a couple weeks ago, sponsored by Global Exchange, and we had a meeting with Ambassador Hugo Lawrence, who's the U.S. ambassador there in Tegucigalpa, and we brought up a number of concerns, and he came across as saying, look, you're preaching to the choir, because we are very much concerned about this coup regime. We have denounced it. We call it a coup, and we've cut or suspended aid and so forth. But we then pointed out some very specific concerns which really underscore your comment about the U.S. not taking a hard line against the coup. Mm-hmm. Every year there's a foreign operations law, and as far as I know, it's section 7008 in the foreign operations law for fiscal year 2009, which clearly says that when there is a government that has expelled or subverted the power of a democratically elected president, either by decree or by force, if they have taken over, then that in a military coup, then the U.S. must end all economic and military aid to that nation. Well, this is a question that we pressed very, very strongly with the ambassador. And he said, well, we have very much called it a coup. However, we have legally not defined it as a coup, as a military coup, in accordance with Section 7008 of the Foreign Operations Law. And so we pressed him on that, and he said, well, we're waiting for the negotiated settlement process to run its course. Basically, that's the position that the U.S. took. It's not a position that most of the rest of the international community took with regard to the coup regime. Most of the world community withdrew their ambassadors, and of course the U.S. ambassador remained there. Most of them completely ended all aid if they had any going there, and also considered trade relations and started to take steps toward something that could eventually be a complete embargo. So steps toward that. And the U.S. has not really talked about affecting trade with Honduras in spite of the fact that there's been a coup. So now, just this week, the Organization of American States continued its process that they began very shortly after the coup, because right after the coup they unanimously passed a resolution with regard to Honduras, saying that it was a coup and that it was completely denounced and that no government in the hemisphere would recognize the coup regime. But then this led to the mediated process led by President Oscar Arias from Costa Rica. That apparently was initiated very much by Secretary Hillary Clinton. And in that process, there were a number of points that came up in the mediation, and President Zelaya accepted every single one of them, even though it means that upon his return, his power would be debilitated, and he had to renounce this process of the straw poll toward an eventual constitutional assembly. So he accepted it 100%, and of course the coup regime headed by Roberto Micheletti rejected any possibility of Manuel Zelaya coming back to Honduras as president. Mm-hmm. So this then created some kind of a dead end, and seven foreign ministers from the Organization of American States went to Honduras Monday and Tuesday of this week, and basically they came away empty-handed, and that is when the U.S. has started to increase pressure against Honduras all the more. Many of the steps that the U.S. has taken have been symbolic until now, but now, this week, they did suspend all new applications for non-immigrant visas for any Honduran, and that does affect quite a few people who will be upset with that, and therefore the hope is they will transfer that being upset toward the coup regime. And also the U.S. just yesterday, through unidentified spokespeople in the State Department, have said that now they are recommending to Secretary Clinton that the U.S. actually define what happened as a military coup so that Section 708 of the Foreign Operations Law can come into effect, and that not only then would it mean the suspension of $18 million in economic aid, but that would go up to over $150 million, which will now be in jeopardy in terms of Honduras receiving that aid. So yeah. Now, if the U.S. does take that step, now it will really start to take serious steps. But it's been, over 60 days, and some are saying very clearly that this is too little, too late.
Well, and yes, and as you say, that apparently, and this has just recently happened, that people in the State Department, staff in the State Department, have recommended that we take that step and say officially, yes, this is a coup, and have made the recommendation to the Secretary of State, and she apparently is thinking about it. And the most recent story that I've seen on this just says something like, well, she's expected to make up her mind on that sometime soon. Do you think that in fact it is likely that that's what's going to happen, and that then the further actions that you talked about the United States making, that in fact the United States will do that?
David, I really do think that is what's going to happen. And I believe that the U.S. policy, not publicly stated, but what has happened in practice, is that the U.S. has taken these very lukewarm steps to symbolically show that they are opposed to the coup. And this has basically dragged on the process. And I think the strategy of the United States administration has been thinking around the elections, which is very much what the coup regime has wanted to sort of point to as an end to this crisis. If the president can be kept out of the country and then the elections take place and the new president is installed in January, then this is all history. Well, it seems like the U.S. was leaning toward that strategy as well until, in the last 10 days or so, both the resistance inside Honduras, together with many countries of what's called the UNASUR, the Union of South American Nations, came up with a unanimous decision not to recognize any government that would come out of Honduras if the election takes place under the coup regime. So this really put the United States policy in a predicament, because the U.S. does not want this crisis to extend beyond the elections and have, you know, dozens of countries around the world not recognize a new government whose election takes place under this regime. So it's very clear now that the U.S. has heard the voice of UNASUR nations, as well as those who oppose this regime strongly in Honduras. And now the U.S. Is really starting to tighten the screws. As I say, it seems like they're very late in doing this, and it seems like that has been their policy, is to act very slowly, which means that the presidential power is debilitated the longer he's outside of the country. And then now I do believe that it is U.S. policy that the president must come back, because the U.S. very much wants the elections at the end of November to be legitimized, and therefore, so they need President Zelaya to come back. So I believe they will continue to escalate the pressure until the president is forced until the coup regime is forced to accept that the president return.
All right. We're at our midpoint here in this part of Focus 580. We're talking about Honduras and the political crisis that's been going on in that country through the summer, beginning in late June when a coup took place. It's certainly a lot of people believe that it was a coup, and the United States seems to be very close to actually officially declaring that it was a coup. When the president was forced from power, his opponents say that he was wanting to change the country's constitution to get rid of the term limit on the presidency so he could run again. Other people have said, as our guest this morning has explained, that that's really not it at all, that it was about the people who were in power in the country wanting to stay in power and not wanting the constitution to change to affect them. And we're talking this morning with Andres Contreras. He is founder of Democracy Now! In Spanish. He also serves as director of the Program on the Americas for the organization Nonviolence International, that is a group that is interested in promoting nonviolent action and reducing violence around the world. They have a base of operations in Washington, D.C., but also have centers other places around the country. He's been there and spent a lot of time in Honduras this summer and is going back today. Actually, after we finish talking, he'll be going back to Honduras. Questions are welcome, and we do have someone here we will bring into the conversation, someone in Monticello on our toll-free line. This is line 4. Hello. Yes.
I arrived in Honduras about the time the coup happened, working for Copin on a radio station. That actually is one of the two stations now, the two powerful stations still on the air that support Zelaya. I want to second what your guest said about the nonviolent aspects of the demonstrations. I know some of the people who are in charge of those demonstrations and are leaders of the demonstrations, and they are very committed to nonviolence. So if there's any violence happening, it's not sanctioned, that's for sure. I was wondering, I knew a lot of the people that were going to the big rally in Tegucigalpa in support of having the straw poll, and they came back very dejected because they weren't even allowed to assemble by the army. And I'm wondering about the ramifications for the stability of the whole area, because it seems like if the Micheletti government is allowed to increase its power, gather together thugs of the Contra War as they have, I've heard that Micheletti met with John Negroponte 2 days before the coup. And I'm just wondering if there's a buildup of this kind of right-wing apparatus in the center of Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua, if it might be a staging point for destabilizing those governments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for your question, your comments. You raise a number of interesting themes. You raised the name John Negroponte. Well, John Dimitri Negroponte was the U.S. ambassador in the early 80s, from 81 till 85, in the Reagan administration. And he very much was in, during his tenure, military aid to Honduras just escalated enormously. Honduras was very much became a staging ground for the Contra War against Nicaragua, as well as the counterinsurgency against the FMLN in El Salvador. One of the famous death squad leaders during the early 80s when Negroponte was ambassador is a man by the name of Billy Joya. Captain Billy Joya, Honduran, was part of the death squad, Battalion 316, which kidnapped and tortured students and others. Billy Joya is basically has become the chief security advisor for the Micheletti regime. So it really is amazing how the repression seen in the 80s is continuing to happen with the takeover by this coup. I think you also mentioned COPIN, which is a very strong indigenous organization. COPIN is basically the Council of Popular and Indigenous Organizations of Honduras. It's mostly made up of Lenca people from the middle of the country. And it's very interesting to note that one of the COPIN leaders is Berta Cáceres. She is now a vice presidential candidate, with the independent presidential candidate being Carlos H. Reyes. Both Carlos and Berta have been strong leaders in the front that is resisting the coup. I'm not sure I'm getting to the heart of your question at the end there.
Well, I was just wondering about the fact that you have this very strong right-wing organization being formed in Honduras, and and all this history of them attacking, well, the base of Palmarola being used to attack Nicaragua and indirectly El Salvador, and now Guatemala has a kind of left-leaning government, and could not this kind of staging area be used again against the people of Honduras? I mean, the wishes of the people of Honduras.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, geopolitically, Honduras has been the staging ground. You know, way back, going back to 1954, when Jacobo Arbenz had been elected president in Guatemala and was president for 10 years, there was an invasion of Guatemala, led by many who were supported by the CIA, and that invasion took place from Honduras. And you mentioned Palmarola Air Base. That's been the largest U.S. military base in the whole Central American region, based right there in Honduras. So over the years, Honduras has mostly been an invisible country, primarily. Even those who have been concerned about Central America for decades, very few have really gotten involved in Honduras. One of the reasons I have spent time in Honduras this summer is because for 5 years I lived in Honduras. I worked with the United Methodist Church support at a group called the Christian Commission for Development, and I was a human rights advocate from 1994 to 1999. And so it's many of my friends who are involved in the streets and many who've been hospitalized by the brutal repression. And I just couldn't stay here comfortably in the U.S. And so I immediately went to Honduras right after the coup, and we organized an emergency delegation with a number of groups, including Code Pink and Global Exchange and Nonviolence International. And then that was the very first international delegation. There have now been six other international delegations that have gone to Honduras since the coup as an expression of civil society's concern for what is happening there and wanting to monitor it so that the world can very much know from a civil society perspective what is happening.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that Ramon Custodio, who was very outspoken in favor of civil rights back in the day in the 80s, and now he's come out as an apologist for the Micheletti regime.
Right. And Dr. Custodio, he in the 80s he was a friend of mine very much because he was the strongest voice against the military repression against dissidents. And yes, he has become an apologist, and he has been condemned by the international human rights community. It's very interesting, his comment that he came out with this week. I think he's personally peeved that he was one of four members of the Micheletti administration who was pointed to, and his diplomatic visa was removed, so it was revoked, and that happened a couple weeks ago, and of course there has been international condemnation of his lack of support for the defense of human rights as the human rights commissioner, but so what was his response this week? In the news, I read that Dr. Ramon Custodio is now saying, well, why do we need a U.S. base here anyway? It's time for them to go. So it's very interesting that out of his chagrin for being ostracized by the U.S., this is his way of getting back to the U.S. And those of us in the human rights and peace and nonviolence community are in agreement with him about that. We don't believe there needs to be a permanent U.S. military presence in Honduras.
Well, I want to thank the caller. We're coming down to the point where we have maybe about 10, 12 minutes left. I'd like to introduce again our guest, Andres Contreras. He is the director of the program on the Americas for the group Nonviolence International. He's founder of Democracy Now! In Spanish. Has been active with the International Network for the Abolition of Foreign Military Bases, has been a documentary filmmaker. He's spending a lot of time, as he said, this summer in Honduras, talking with people there about what's been going on ever since the end of June when there was a coup in the country. Questions, welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. As we have discussed, there was, and I guess people are still expecting that there will be an election November 29th, and then there will be a new president will be elected, and that person will take office at the end of January. As I have read about this, before this all took place, the leading candidate was a man of the current ruling party, and that people thought chances are he would be elected and he would be the next president, a man named Elvin Santos. But since then, there has been a lot of anger apparently directed toward Mr. Santos because people somehow think he had something to do with or maybe supported the coup. So now there seems to be some sort of question about what exactly the coup in reaction to it is going to mean for the election in November, provided, of course, that the election goes ahead.
It's a very, very interesting point, David, because it's now really a wild card. Yes, Mr. Elvin Santos was probably leading in the polls. The other candidate of the major party is Pepe Lobo, is his name, of the National Party. And Elvin Santos, I think he had somewhere around 49 to 59% of the vote in one of the polls before the coup, and that's gone down to about 19%. So it's very, very interesting in terms of how the coup is going to affect the election. It's really up in the air. Nobody can predict it with any accuracy because there are so many unknowns happening. And it could, in fact, happen that one of the lesser parties, and even this independent candidacy of Carlos H. Reyes, could really have a chance to have victory. However, it's important to point out that the front that is resisting the coup came out yesterday with a plea to all of the partisans in the campaign, saying very clearly that the election season with campaigning is to officially begin 9 months before the election on November 29th. So that means pretty much tomorrow is the 29th of August, and that's when campaigning starts officially. And what the front against the coup is very seriously requesting is that no candidate for any office at all engage in any campaigning whatsoever. And this as a way to further repudiate the coup regime, and if the coup regime maintains itself in power, then there will be a plea to completely boycott any election whatsoever. So, and this includes, of course, their favorite, who would be Carlos H. Reyes, and they are asking him not to campaign, and they will ask him not to run. He may even withdraw if, in fact, the coup regime lasts the next 3 months.
Well, let's talk with someone else here in Urbana, where we are, line one.
Yes, hello. Yes. I have a question for Mr. Contreras, whether he is aware of any kinds of purges of progressive people in sort of either the government or research institutes associated with the government. We've heard that the director of the Institute of Anthropology and History in Tegucigalpa, Dr. Dario Eurache, who has a PhD from the University of Wisconsin, has been ousted, and he's resisting that. And I was wondering whether there was more news of this type.
It's interesting you mentioned, Dario is a friend of mine from a long time ago, and I ran into his wife, Polly, in one of the demonstrations about a month ago. Yes, there have been some examples of that. And militarily, there was apparently a colonel in the 105 Brigade, or the 105 Battalion, I believe, out of San Pedro Sula, and he was dismissed from his position because he seemed to be sympathetic to the constitutional and democratically elected President Zelaya instead of the coup regime. There aren't too many other visible examples of that, but there are examples of those who have been supportive of the coup regime at the international level in the embassies and consulates. They have been removed and by Manuel Zelaya because all the international community only respects President Zelaya, and therefore if President Zelaya requests the change of any ambassador, and those requests have gone through in Washington, in Buenos Aires, in several other countries, and what happened in Buenos Aires led the coup regime to express its complete disdain for all of the Argentine diplomats, and they were all ordered expelled. However, Argentina does not recognize it as a legitimate order from to expel their diplomats, so they're not following that order. The same is true with Venezuela at the embassy there. The Venezuelan diplomats were ordered to leave, and they have refused to leave. And I believe the same is happening with Argentina.
Does that get at your question, Carl?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Others are certainly welcome. Again, we have about 5-6 minutes, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Do you think even if Mr. Zelaya was able to go back to Honduras and take up again the post of president, is it possible, given everything that's happened, for there to be a functioning government?
It's a very good question as well. And really, you know, for those who have remained in the government, they have either had to be silent, or if they have spoken out in any way or shown their true colors, then they are, they're going to be fired like Darío. Basically, then, if the president is restored, now if he's restored under the San Jose Accords, his powers will be diminished, and there will be a so-called unity government And it's really hard to imagine any kind of unity government forming in time for a campaign for president to be free and fair, you know. So it's really, really up in the air what's going to be happening in the next week or two in Honduras, because it's so many unpredictable factors are at play.
Hmm. We're coming down to the point where we have maybe about 4 or 5 minutes left, and I'm interested in your thoughts, particularly for the benefit of people who don't follow Latin American politics, your thoughts about why this really matters, or perhaps a different way of saying it is what does this mean, or does this have some kind of important and far-reaching consequences for other governments in the region?
Oh, absolutely. It does have far-reaching consequence because, you know, the movement toward respecting democratic elections does not have deep roots in the hemisphere. And so any disturbance of that is really something that is paid attention to, and fears have been expressed in governments. You know, we're talking in Bolivia or even Ecuador. They have said that you know, because this has happened in Honduras, it does send a foreboding message to the rest of the hemisphere in terms of whether those democratic institutions will remain stable. So it's really, really vital for both the United States to live up to its commitment. President Obama was at the Summit of the Americas in Trinidad and Tobago a couple months ago, and he you know, said that there's going to be a new policy toward Latin America. Well, so far he hasn't really lived up to that. So that it's important for the Obama administration to take a strong step in that direction. It's also interesting to point out that the Organization of American States met in Honduras in the month of June, the very month of the coup. They met on June 1st in San Pedro Sula, the whole assembly of nations, and President Zelaya was the one who picked the theme of that conference, and he picked the theme of a culture of peace and nonviolence. And so his commitment is one that goes far back to peaceful and nonviolent means of resolving conflict, and he has repeatedly said this to his followers in the country, that any effort to try to change the regime, yes, they must move forward, but they must move forward with a commitment toward using creative and imaginative nonviolent efforts.
Since he was removed at the end of June, I know that Mr. Zelaya has tried, I think, a couple of times to return to Honduras and has been blocked in his attempts. Where is he now?
He's mostly been hanging out in Ocotal, in the northern part of Nicaragua. And he does spend some time in Managua, but he's also traveled a great deal to many countries who have invited him as a show of solidarity. So, but most of the time he's in the northern part of Nicaragua. Mm.
You talked earlier about the fact that when he was removed from the country, his first stop was this a military base where there were significant numbers of American troops. You didn't say so, but I suppose some people hearing that, despite what the administration has said, would wonder, first of all, whether you think or anyone thinks that the United States had advance notice that the coup was going to take place.
Well, one thing is certain, that the rationale given by the United States as to why that plane had to land is absolutely ludicrous. So that points us in the direction of what really happened. What's the reason they gave? They said that the plane had to refuel. Well, it's ridiculous for a plane to have to go 60 miles to refuel when they could have had enough fuel leaving from the Toncontin Airport in Tegucigalpa in the first place, and they weren't going that far to Costa Rica. It's not that distant. So given that they have given some kind of bogus reason as to why that plane had to land, then does point toward some deeper maybe malevolent reasons as to why the plane had to land at this U.S. base.
That would seem, though, to indicate some rather confused state of mind collectively in Washington, D.C. about how it is they felt about Mr. Zelaya and about his removal, particularly if now they're at the point of officially declaring this a military coup.
Exactly right. And, you know, the U.S. did join the international community, both at the United Nations and the OAS, in declaring its repudiation of the coup. However, that is really just empty words unless real actions are taken, and mostly the United States is in a position to take action because the U.S. is the largest trading partner with Honduras, and the U.S. really has a lot of history with Honduras that could be called upon really to exert much more pressure, and the U.S. has not done that. And so that goes back to what I believe has been a delaying policy. I think now they're seeing that they cannot delay any longer because of the consequences of further delay. So now I believe the U.S. will very much do a lot more to try to get Manuel Zelaya back into power. But it really does question the U.S.'s commitment to democracy when, in fact, they did not come out strongly in favor of undoing the coup early on. Mm.
Well, there we'll have to leave it with our thanks to Andres Contreras. He's founder of Democracy Now! In Spanish. He also serves as director of the program on the Americas of Nonviolence International. And you'll be going back, so I expect you'll continue to follow this as long as this continues, I guess.
That's exactly right, David. I just want to say briefly that a kind of action that we are considering in the nonviolent community is to engage in an international fast in favor of Honduras. So we would invite some of your listeners to stay tuned, and we'll be sending more information out about that.
All right. Well, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you, David.
We appreciate it. Our guest again in this part of Focus 580, Andres Contreras. By the way, if you're interested in finding out some more about the group I've mentioned, Nonviolence International, you can go to their website, which is nonviolenceinternational.net.